Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Yelovich is an own goal. It's an own goal.
With your host, Joe Manko. Yahoo Sports. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's going in.
Right now.
Ole, 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 ole. Ole, ole.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. We are taping this pod on Thursday, February 9th, with a full weekend of league action ahead in Europe. But we're devoting this episode to next week when the round of 16 begins in the UEFA Champions League. Anyway, joining me to discuss the 8 round of 16 matchups is Shahan Ahmed, Alex Baker, and Leander Charlakens. Guys, let's not bury the lead. Who is the favorite to win the Champions League?
This is going to be boring, but I'm going to say Real Madrid. And that's,
it's not boring.
Well, I mean, they've already won it like 2 out of the last 3 years. And then it's not even that they're this spectacular team right now, but it's just that the other favorites are worse. I think Barcelona and Bayern are sort of plodding through results lately. They're winning games, they're getting results, but they're not playing well. Real Madrid maybe has the benefit of not having played last weekend because their match was canceled. So, you know, I kind of see them as the strongest team in Europe at the moment.
For those not watching Facebook Live, that is the voice of Alex Baker. I'm going to throw it to Shahan Ahmed now for his take on who's the favorite to win it all in this Champions League.
Well, judging by the odds online, it seems as though Barcelona is just a slight favorite over Bayern. For me, this Champions League and this round of 16 in general, I think that it's really close. Every single matchup, you can kind of see the underdog winning. And I think that kind of speaks to where we're at. I don't think that Real Madrid's going to repeat just because no team has done it in back-to-back years. And I think Real's actually putting on a really good season in La Liga. And it seems like winning the league might end up actually trumping their European cause eventually. I think Barcelona, it's tough not to see the talent on the field, even though I think they've kind of been in a rut. But all the top teams, I mean, Bayern hasn't been particularly great. I think every team you can see getting beaten, and that's kind of where we're at. So, I mean, to not answer your question, I cannot answer your question, and that's kind of where we're at.
Well, I'm with Alex. I'm going with the Real Madrid because they have the fewer amount of questions right now, but let's hear from Leander Charlakens. Leander, how do you see this? Is there a favorite?
Well, I think it's kind of telling. We were trying to hash this out before we started the podcast, and we were having a tough time sort of coming to a consensus, as I think is reflected in our answers here. And, I mean, all of these teams are kind of sort of flawed in some way. I mean, Manchester City obviously is going through a difficult year. A team like Monaco, there's not a lot of French teams that are deep enough to be able to make that kind of run. Dortmund's having a bad year. Bayern has fallen off quite a lot. Arsenal, well, is Arsenal. Atletico isn't as good as last year. Barcelona's having a difficult season. Paris Saint-Germain has fallen off. Does Leicester City really belong in this group? Probably not. So then by default, you kind of wind up with Real Madrid, which might be the most complete team here. So my stumbling indicates that that's kind of where I land as well.
Just to, you know, to go back to what we were talking about before, I'll take the field. You guys take Real Madrid. Is that fair?
Wow. I'm pretty confident in that.
Sure.
You guys. So Joe actually really is going out on the limb and saying you think that Real Madrid will win this year.
It has nothing to do with them and their 40 game unbeaten streak. It just goes back to, I look at Bayern, and they're not the dominant Bayern that we've all known the last few years. I think a lot of that is, you know, Carlo Ancelotti has said a couple of weeks ago they're still learning how to play. You know, the players are still learning how to adjust to him, and he's still learning a lot about his players. Barcelona has not been Barcelona for whatever reason. You know, Neymar went on a long scoring drought, and normally, you know, with that front three, they're all clicking together. And it seems like with Neymar not functioning with the other two, Suarez and Messi, that's really affected them. So, yeah, I feel like Real Madrid is really, by default, is the team to beat.
But what I'll say is last weekend, though, Neymar actually looked really good. He was their standout player.
He had a great game.
And he, you know, that's...
Without scoring.
Exactly. And I think you were seeing him making the runs and really having creating all the action. Now, he was missing in the cup game because he was suspended. And Luis Suarez is going to be suspended for the Copa del Rey final now. I think that Barcelona will win two trophies this year. I'm not sure what that'll be. It could be the league and Copa del Rey, because I'm sorry, but Alaves probably isn't beating Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final. That's in the bag, you would imagine.
Is that 5,000 to 1?
It very well could be. I mean, I think you would get great odds on picking Alaves.
In the final, you know, a dodgy call here and there changes everything.
It does, but you know, even without Suarez in that final, you would take Barcelona. You know, 4,999 out of 5,000 times.
All day.
So, and I think that team still has so much talent that I can't see them not winning either La Liga or making a very, very serious run in the Champions League. And you know, when you look at Real Madrid, I mean, they don't win the league this year. It'll be one league title in, I think, the last 7 years, I want to say. The only one they've won in recent memory is the one they won in Mourinho's second year when he showed up.
2011, right?
Yeah, well, it was 11-12, I think, right? Because he came over 10-11, 11-12 was his second season. Yeah. So I think that seems to be a focus for that team is to – they've already been top of Europe a couple of years, you know, two out of the last 3 years. I think they want to be top of Spain and really hand it to Barcelona this year. And I think that might even – as the season progresses and you get into April, which is when they have their next Clásico and – as you know, I think, yes, you don't take your eyes off of Europe, obviously, but this team has won Europe two out of the last three years. I think that there's some guys on this team that have not won in Spain, and that's something where it'll kind of play in. And Barcelona, save what you will. I mean, you know, Iniesta has been used very sparingly because they've been saving him for this time of year. And, you know, they have guys like Gomes who is seeming to come around now. Rakitic is getting a little bit more settled back into playing in, because they've had those adjustments because of Iniesta going out with injury and being a little bit more aged. I think that you could see I can see why they're the favorites, because I don't think anyone is convincing, and I'm just going to go with history and say that I don't see a team winning back-to-back years.
It's established that Shahan doesn't think Real Madrid is going to.
I think we've made that case. Yeah.
No, all right. Let's get to the last 16 matchups, because we're going to go through all eight, and we got to get through these fairly quickly. But you know, we're going to spend time on the really big, massive matchups, and we'll start with Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona. It's one of the two that kicks off the round of 16 on Tuesday, February 14th. The other matchup being Benfica against Borussia Dortmund. So these two teams last met in the Champions League last year in the quarterfinals, and Barca won pretty easily, 5-1 on aggregate. This is different with these teams. Neither team is leading their domestic league. They're both in second place. If you want to go back to the group stage, PSG was runner-up to Arsenal in Group A, and Barca won Group C going away with 15 points. So my question to you guys is, you know, what's the big reason for these teams not being their dominant selves, it seems?
I mean, Real Madrid had a crazy, crazy, like, unbeaten streak. That run is going to put every other team behind them, you know? And that's kind of why. And Barcelona hasn't looked quite right. We just talked about it. PSG, they've had to do some changes with Zlatan leaving. I mean, it's a big time. I mean, that type of miss, I don't think people fully understood the gravity of what he did for PSG until he wasn't there. You know, it's like, you don't know what you got till it's gone. Well, I think PSG has taken a while to kind of adjust to it. And also, I mean, Monaco has been really good this year. Falcao is back from the dead. I mean, I thought I'd written off his career at this point, but he's scoring goals regularly. And Monaco has a pretty darn good team overall. You know, Nice had that little bit of a run with Balotelli scoring pretty regularly as well. I think the entire French league kind of caught up when PSG fell down a little bit. Now, with Draxler coming in, they seem like they've caught a little bit of lightning in a bottle again, and we'll see if they can charge on and continue their dominance.
Yeah, I think the lack of Zlatan is a big factor here. And I think Cavani's done a great job with making up the goals. He's actually got I think more goals than any striker in any of Europe's top five leagues. He's leading Ligue 1 with like 22 goals. But what you lose with Zlatan is Cavani's not any by any means the kind of leader on the pitch that Ibrahimovic was. And I think Ibrahimovic is a player who carries teams over the line, and that's why he's won so much. And, you know, Cavani's a great striker, but I don't see him as any kind of great personality or leader. And I think that that PSG are missing that.
Leander, you know, I'm going to throw this to you. Do you think these teams need to win the Champions League to salvage their seasons?
I think there's an element to that, yeah, because Barcelona, I mean, if you're being realistic, they're only a point behind Real Madrid and La Liga on the one hand, but Real has two games in hand. So assuming that they pick up 4 points from those and quite possibly, maybe even probably six, you know, that's a 5 to 7 point gap. And that's going to be hard to make up because it's February now and there isn't sort of eons of time to get through. And, you know, if it's going to be a year where all Barcelona wins is the Copa del Rey, because I think we can safely assume that they will do that, that's not a very good season by their standards. And, you know, you could anticipate seeing Luis Enrique fired over that. Paris Saint-Germain, I think, maybe has come to the end of a cycle a little bit in a sense, you know, with Zlatan leaving. But it's not just that, because there's a few players on that team, I think, that are sort of getting to the end of their primes or maybe even past it, like, you know, Maxwell, maybe Thiago Silva to an extent, Thiago Motta. I'll actually go to bat for Edinson Cavani, and I think he was dramatically underused in the past by playing him on the left flank. He gets a lot of abuse sort of on social media because he does tend to miss big chances, but he doesn't really get credit for the amount of chances he creates for himself with his runs and sort of his physicality and everything. I think he's one of the best strikers in Europe, and he's kind of been seen as this klutz for the last few years. So he has carried their attack. But I think that, you know, both teams have fallen off, and since both are kind of in trouble with their domestic league, definitely in Barcelona's case, I think the season is a failure if they don't win the Champions League, assuming they don't win La Liga.
Does Luis Enrique have a job next season if they don't win the Champions League?
I say not.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Who do you guys see replacing Enrique in that?
Well, they keep denying that Ronald Koeman is in line for the job, which is usually a sign that he is.
Ronald Koeman has been linked to the job for as long as he has been a head coach, which is going back to Vitesse sort of in the early 2000s, just because he had such a rich playing history there. It was always sort of assumed that he would eventually go back to Barcelona and be the manager there, especially after he had so much success at Ajax. But he's kind of hit and miss as a manager, and I'm not necessarily convinced he's what that team needs right now.
I personally would like the return of Louis van Gaal, but that's just me.
So this tie begins at PSG, as I said, on next Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, and then it ends March 8th at Barcelona. What can we expect to see? How is this going to play out?
I mean, I think PSG could probably get a result on the first leg, but I think over two legs, Barcelona wins and moves on, and PSG gets knocked out. But I wouldn't be surprised to see PSG with a 2-1 win or something in the first leg. But I just think over two legs, you know, both these teams, as we've discussed, are kind of slumping, but Barcelona is still Barcelona. They're still a far superior team. And, I just can't see PSG knocking them out.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think that Barcelona advances. They might get a draw in Paris, or maybe even lose. But I don't see them losing over two legs, 180 minutes. That's just not happening for me.
Leander, how do you see this playing out?
I'm gonna be, you know, unexciting and take Barcelona as well. They have the away game first, which always strikes me as an advantage in the sense that you score a few goals, and so, you know, it's easier said than done, of course, but suddenly your opponent is in really big trouble because then they have to come to your stadium and you can kind of play it a little bit more conservatively, bunker a little bit, which isn't what Barcelona does necessarily, but they do have their ways of stifling opponents. So that's a big advantage, which only plays to Barcelona's strengths.
And they've been doing that more. I think that second leg with Letty, you saw them kind of shift around with formations and have more defensive-minded midfielders at least in there.
If someone's going to step up for PSG, I mean, it's Cavani, right? That needs to, but who else could be the a factor, an X factor for PSG if they were to upset Barca?
I mean, Julian Draxler, I believe, has scored on his league debut and his French Cup debut. So if he was to score on his Champions League debut with PSG, it would be, it would be the trifecta. It would be the Marcus Rashford, if you will. And that would definitely put them in a good spot to at least rattle Barcelona, if not, you know, possibly even advance.
Yeah, and you've got Angel Di Maria, who perhaps was the most influential player in Real Madrid's second-to-last Champions League success. So I think, you know, he's a guy who might have something to say in this if they're going to swing the tie PSG's way.
All right. Well, let's move on to the other matchup on the opening day of the last 16. Benfica against Borussia Dortmund. It opens at Benfica. And Benfica was the runner-up in Group B with 8 points behind Napoli. Dortmund won Group F over Real Madrid, somewhat surprisingly, with 14 points. And that included an 8-4 destruction of Legia Warsaw. Is that Legia Warsaw? Anyway.
crickets.
who has the edge in this last 16 tie?
Dortmund for me still. Yeah, I think Benfica is a good team, and they always have been, and they actually have done pretty well in European competition. I think I'm correct in saying they've made three of the last, if they make it, it'll be the third time in 6 years that they make it to the quarterfinals. But I think Dortmund still, that win over Leipzig was actually a pretty big win for them. And it kind of showed that when the matches are big, they can show up for the occasion. And so, the players still have quality there. Aubameyang is one of the best, you know, strikers, and he's just a handful. Him alone, you just have him run at defenses, and what do you do? no one can catch up to the guy. And you know, Royce is back. He missed a ton of chances, but he's still in the position to take those chances, and you'd bet on him getting it right at some point, you know, over 180 minutes. So I think this will be an exciting tie.
I think it's difficult to make the case for Benfica. I mean, as Leander said, Dortmund might not be having the greatest season, but they're still one of the top teams in Europe. And you mentioned Aubameyang. You know, Christian Pulisic is having a great season.
Who?
Since Joey's not here, I'll mention Pulisic.
We need a drop for that.
I know.
Right?
Joey.
I need to go cut that up.
But I watched them in the German Cup this week, and they won on penalties. And there's just kind of some grit about this team. They're not as dazzling as you kind of expect the Thomas Tuchel team to be at times, but they've been kind of pulling out these sort of gritty wins. And I just don't see Benfica having enough to get past Borussia Dortmund over two legs.
It seems like Dortmund's been slowed down a bit. I think it was Leverkusen that beat them that was really in their face, really got in their face with a high press. I'm trying to remember how the game played out. And I think, you know, Benfica, looking at their Premier League stats, they've conceded the second fewest amount of goals in league. Take that for, you know, whatever you want. And so does Benfica have enough defensive wherewithal to slow down a Dortmund attack that really just comes at you in waves? It doesn't matter. There's really no drop-off when they bring someone off the bench. It's amazing how much attacking talent this team has, and it's not just Christian Pulisic. There are a number of guys who can, and we're not even talking, you know, Marco Royce is just working his way in from injury, and Mario Götze really hasn't done anything this season, anything memorable. It's kind of incredible. I just don't know. I can't see Benfica slowing them down. I mean, Leander, how do you see this shaping up?
I think this installment of the podcast should be titled Dortmund's is more than Christian Pulisic. That's a great line. Also, Thomas Tuchel has a great name. That said, Benfica is a solid team. They're in first place in the Premier Liga in Portugal. As Shahan said, they're sort of steady in Europe. But Dortmund has so many weapons, and they kind of have that in common with Paris Saint-Germain, in that, you know, there's so many different players that can make a play and that can beat you, especially now that Marco Reus is back. And, you know, Mario Götze might have a fit of the old Mario Götze who scored a World Cup winning goal. It's I have a hard time seeing anyone but the really biggest teams holding down that attack. Now, that's not to say that Dortmund's defense is suddenly going to become a lot more reliable, yeah. But I don't think Benfica is going to be the team that stops them.
All right. Well, let's move on to the following week, or the following day, the following Wednesday, February 15th. The big game on that match day is going to be Bayern against Arsenal. We've talked ad nauseum about Arsenal's problems, but we'll address them again here.
We'll keep it short this time, though.
So
let's not bring up Chelsea, all right?
I'll try not to.
This is a Champions League podcast.
Exactly. Hey.
Ooh, burn.
There's only one London champion. And that's ever won the Champions League, so you know who that is. This is the – not to get too sensitive on you. This is the fourth straight year, guys, that these teams – have met in the Champions League. They were drawn together in the group stage last year. Arsenal won 2-0 at home, and they got crushed by at Bayern 5-1. This is the fourth knockout stage meeting between the two. Bayern has won all three previous knockout ties. So, give me one reason why history won't repeat itself. Why?
Crickets.
How can Arsenal have a chance to get past Bayern? I'll rephrase that.
I'll look back to the 2010-2011 season. Back the last time Bayern did not advance past this point, and that's when they faced Inter in probably one of the most entertaining round of 16 ties, save for maybe last year when they played Juve. Yeah. I think that's kind of where you have to look at it in terms of this team can have those gaps even in the back, even with Guardiola. You know, they let in 2 goals at home at the Allianz last year against Juve. They don't play the home leg second this time because they finished second in their group. So Arsenal has that advantage where mm-hmm. if they go on away and show up in that first leg, they could technically do the business in the second leg at the Emirates, which, again, these are we're reaching here, all right?
I'm with you.
Let's be honest. Right now, I mean, Bayern hasn't been playing up to their level. Arsenal's not playing near their level. So, I mean, two bad teams, not bad teams, but you know what I'm saying. They're not necessarily their informed teams. Anything can happen. But really, on the balance of everything, I just don't see it happening. I think Bayern is still playing much, much better. And I think Arsenal's in the darkest period inside the locker room and outside on the pitch. Because right now, they haven't looked right. And there seems to be something else going on, even, you know, with Alexis and what else.
I don't know. I think if there was a season for Arsenal to do one on Bayern, this is probably it. Just because we've seen Bayern struggle. We've seen some kind of weird disarray at the club. Somehow Philipp Lahm's retirement announcement has ruffled feathers. You've got, you know, Thomas Müller not scoring goals like in the way he has in the past. And they've been eking out results, not very convincingly, under Ancelotti lately. And, you know, he's made the case that we'll be fresher because we've had a winter break, but it seems to not be quite in their rhythm. And, you know, you're saying that Arsenal are not up to the usual selves. I think this is their usual self. They swing back and forth from results. And I think it's Bayern.
They do surprise you, don't they?
That's the thing. They'll lose to Watford, and then they'll go and beat Barcelona. That's typical Arsenal. So I think for Arsenal, the key is they can go to the first leg and they can lose, but they have to not go down too deep a hole because they always go to these 4-0 drubbings the first leg, and then they'll come back and they'll fight.
They're going to give you hope.
Almost be enough, but
yeah,
not quite. So
that's what they do.
If they could lose only by a couple goals the first leg, then I think that they could go to London.
The hope is that they lose by a couple goals.
That's every Gunner's most sincere.
Also, to add to your retiring talk, I mean, Xabi Alonso's in his last year too, so you do have some older guys on the team.
Yeah.
Hey, more power to you for I'll take that bet.
All right.
Leander, how do you see this Bayern-Arsenal tie playing out?
I see Alex's delusion as being adorable.
Don't give up.
And I get that he was asked to play devil's advocate. But, you know, there's truth to the fact that since the winter break, Bayern has sort of not been firing on all cylinders. They played Freiburg, and they needed a 91st-minute Lewandowski winner after they went behind. They sort of clawed out a win against Werder, and then they got a tie with Schalke, which isn't a great incarnation of the Schalke club at the moment. So that's kind of been problematic. I think they've had some issues with discontent. I think Douglas Costa and Arjen Robben aren't entirely happy. What else is new in the case of the latter? But then Arsenal, it's just such a shambles at the moment. I mean, it's just one of those clubs where every summer, they seem to bring in two or three players who should be good and who should sort of plug the holes that they have and the gaps that have sort of opened up in their team. And they somehow always wind up being disappointing. I can't remember the last player Arsenal bought who was better than expected. And it just seems to happen to them again and again, this cycle of optimism and you know, a non-terrible start to the season, and then the air just goes out of the balloon. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I have a question for you guys. Who should Arsenal start? Should it be the Alexis down the middle with Giroud off the bench, or do you start Giroud? What do you think, Alex?
I think you start Giroud, actually, and put Alexis out on the flank, and then if it doesn't work, you can take Giroud off and move Alexis center. But, you know, if you look at the Chelsea game, where was Alexis? He was on there for 90 minutes. I don't think I saw him do much.
And where was Ozil?
Where was Ozil? Yeah, the big players didn't show up for that. But, you know, Giroud came on and scored a goal. So I do think he does provide a focal point. And you know, Alexis is obviously a much more talented player. But, you know, he needs to turn up in the big games. But nonetheless, I think I would start with Giroud.
I definitely saw Coquelin. He was doing little spinabouts.
If I'm Arsenal, I would hand the marker to Alexis Sanchez, say, here's the blackboard, write down whatever you like, just please, please, please don't leave the club.
And then you secretly put a contract on the back of the blackboard, so whatever he writes counts as a signature.
So we're confident that Arsenal has no chance and Bayern is going through.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. In a nutshell. All right. Let's move on to the other big game next Wednesday. The beginning of this tie is Real Madrid against Napoli. And it starts at Real Madrid. And then the return leg will be March 7th at Napoli. Real finished second Group F with 12 points, two behind Dortmund. Napoli won Group B with 11 points, three better than Benfica. What I do know about Napoli is this Dries Mertens, who is a Belgian winger, who's really worked out well leading the line for Napoli in place of Milik, who's been out with an ACL injury for a while now. He is coming back this weekend, so they need to decide how they're going to work the two together. Are they going to put Mertens back on the wing and Milik be the center of the front three? It's kind of an embarrassment of riches there, but it's something for them to figure out, because I think there's the inclination to stick with Mertens because he's worked out so well. He's worked as a false nine, but now he's really he is a lead striker right now.
Yeah, he scored a hat trick, and so did Hamsik, and they won 7-1. I mean, they'll have a match on this weekend, obviously, but that's what they're coming off of. I don't think you mess with it at all. I think you play what you have. I mean, this is I think one of the most interesting ties in the round of 16, because Napoli is playing really well, and Real Madrid, they've lost, I think I'm correct in saying, eight of the last nine two-legged ties they played against Italian opposition, especially a team that's hot and in form like Napoli is right now. I mean, this isn't some team that just had a random 7-1 result. They're in the Champions League spots in Serie A as well. They've been having a pretty good season. And like you said, Milik's been out, which was their big signing to replace Gonzalo Higuain. Without that, they've still been able to do it. So I think the São Paulo is a very, very difficult place to play. I definitely would not see Real Madrid overlooking Napoli. And I think that this will be a more competitive tie than, frankly, Bayern versus Arsenal.
Yeah, I think Real Madrid's obviously favorite. But if there's an upset that's going to happen this week, this is probably it. We're talking about a Napoli team that hasn't lost since October. That was to Juventus. Since then, they've been undefeated in all competitions. You know, they lost arguably their best player last season, but sometimes you have a standout player like that leave, and you get a case where the team as a whole becomes stronger, which I think maybe we've seen with Napoli. And I agree with Shahan that you stick with Mertens. You don't want to put Milik in his first game back from ACL recovery straight in a Champions League tie against Real Madrid, who I think will probably win this tie, but don't be shocked if Napoli overturn them, because I think it's very possible.
I completely disagree here, to be honest. I don't think it's going to be all that problematic for Real Madrid. I think we're overestimating Napoli. And, you know, there's an old saying that says never change a winning team, which I've always thought to be dumb, because when you've played Bologna and won, it's not the same thing as when you're playing Real Madrid. I mean, there's context there, and there are variables, and a pretty big variable is the opponent. I don't see it. I mean, Real Madrid sort of is rounding back into form, I think. You know, Napoli is a nice team. It's a solid team. But let's be honest. Are Napoli Champions League quarterfinals and quarterfinalists? And if so, are they that at the expense of Real Madrid? I think that's going a little far.
I said competitive. And also, I mean, he's Belgian, Leander. How are you going to go after Dries Mertens?
Well, I am Dutch, and therefore it is my biological duty to be hostile to him.
All right, so we see Real Madrid going through. I think it's time to take a break. After the break, we will talk about Bayer Leverkusen against Atletico Madrid, Man City, Monaco, Porto, Juventus, and Sevilla, Leicester. We'll be right back.
So I wanted to rant today about Claudio Ranieri. And if you actually look into your crystal ball, you may see that I will later on in this podcast, through the magic of editing, argue that it's not worth keeping him on as manager of Leicester City if they're failing in the Premier League, which they are, just because he's doing well in the Champions League, where Leicester has made it into the round of 16. But I was looking earlier today at the final voting for the Best FIFA Men's Coach Award, which is part of the new, completely rebranded FIFA Awards. It used to be called the FIFA Ballon d'Or, blah, blah, blah. It's called the Best Awards now, which is a stupid name. But anyhow, Ranieri won that very justifiably for making Leicester City 5,000-1 odds of winning the Premier League, of making them champions. But what I noticed is that he only got 22.06% of the votes for FIFA Best Men's Coach of the Year. And I'm just gobsmacked that 78% of voters thought somebody else should be Manager of the Year rather than the guy who made Leicester City Premier League champions and did so a year after they were almost relegated. I mean, some of the voting is absolutely dumbfounding. Zinedine Zidane had 16.5% of the vote. And I sort of get that because he came in halfway through the season with Real Madrid and won the Champions League in very difficult circumstances. Fernando Santos had 16%. I get that too. He won the Euro with Portugal. Diego Simeone had a lot of votes. Okay, fine. Atletico was in the Champions League final again. Pep Guardiola, you know, Bayern had another strong season. But then you get to guys like Jurgen Klopp for Liverpool, who won nothing. Didier Deschamps for France, which probably should have won the Euro. Chris Coleman. Mauricio Pochettino of Tottenham, even though they put up a title run, had more than 1% of the vote. I'm just completely astonished that anybody thinks the manager of the year should be someone other than Claudio Ranieri. Having said that, it's probably time for him to go at Leicester.
Okay, we're back. And we'll start out with Bayer Leverkusen against Atletico Madrid. This is one of the two matches on Tuesday, February 21st. This one starts at Leverkusen. And then the return leg is March 15th at Atletico. Just to review what they did in the group stage, Leverkusen was runner-up in Group E with 10 points. Atletico won Group D with 15 points. So, guys, just quickly, how is this going to shape up? Do you see Atletico Madrid being, you know, the team that is going to go through out of this? It seems like they would be.
Yeah, it's hard to not see Atletico Madrid. I think it'd be a good match. I think that, you know, these are both teams that play in a real intense sort of high-pressing style, but I thought Bayer Leverkusen is not having a great season. Chicharito has been not scoring goals. You know, they're not doing very well in the league, and I just think Atletico Madrid is far more experienced and more comfortable on the business end of the Champions League, and I think they're going to Bayer would be lucky to get a result at home, maybe, but there's no way they're going to win the two-legged tie.
Yeah, I think Atletico is a good cup team, and even though they lost to Barcelona, there was, you know, the last 20-30 minutes of that first leg, they looked really good. And the second leg, They were arguably the better team.
I think they were.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, that offside goal should have counted. They should have scored that penalty as well. They really should have gone through even after not really playing well in the first half of that first leg. And that second leg was at the Camp Nou. So, you know, I think that it kind of put them into a good rhythm. Because generally, in my opinion, I think the week before, not necessarily the weekend of the Champions League game, is when you actually see where the teams line up. And when you have a cup game exactly 1 week before you're about to play, or in this case 2 weeks, but still, you're kind of seeing that rhythm of the squad come in, and they looked pretty good. Griezmann still looks pretty good to me too, so I have to go with Atleti.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, if you look at Leverkusen, they've lost 5 of their last 9 Bundesliga games. They've only won 2. They're just not a very strong team. And then Atletico, there's kind of a sense that they're not at their best. They're probably, as a whole this year, they've not been as good as last year or 3 years ago, both of which times they got to the Champions League final. And there's a sense that they're sort of transitioning, that Diego Simeone is probably not going to be the manager for very long anymore. He had his contract shortened, which was sort of strange. They are in a good run of form lately, and they were good against Barcelona. So even though this is not peak Atletico, I think they win this pretty comprehensively. But by which I mean to say, I'm guessing they'll get a goal or two sort of early on and then just kind of pack it in. And I'm not sure it'll be super watchable after that.
Yeah, just one quick note. You know, Diego Godin did go off with what looked like a hamstring issue. So that's something to keep an eye on, just because he does so much for them in the back and even on set pieces, which is one of the main ways they score. So I think having him around, and shout out to Joey Galino, who is like Diego Godin's number one fan.
All right, so we see Atleti going through. Let's go over this other match on Tuesday, February 21st. Man City against Monaco. It starts at the Etihad. And then the return leg is March 15th at Monaco. Some nuggets here for you guys to chew on is Guardiola has never lost in the round of 16 with Barcelona or Bayern. And Monaco is going for their second quarterfinal in the last 3 years. So it seems like this will be a very challenging tie for Man City. And, you know, Monaco, we've mentioned Monaco is leading Ligue 1. And, you know, they have a 3-point lead on over PSG. I don't watch a whole lot of Ligue 1. Does anyone know what's been the secret to Monaco's success?
Well, before we even get to that, I just want to say Monaco's going for their second quarterfinals in 3 years. Man City's going for their second quarterfinals ever. So kind of tells you, you know, as much as we think of Man City as this big club nowadays, they really have no real history in this competition. Last year, they kind of stumbled their way into the semis. Not really sure how that happened still, but they've never, you know, they've never consistently been here. They've never been to the quarterfinals was the first and only time last year. But in terms of Monaco, you know, they've always been a club that buys pretty well and is pretty well stocked. And Radamel Falcao is scoring goals again. You know, I think it would be almost ironic if he was to come in to Manchester of all places and beat City and do the job, you know, beat a Premier League team after he couldn't cut in the Premier League, getting numerous chances. Yeah, he's been good. I mean, that's really been one of the main keys for them. They've found a leader in attack who scores goals, and they play pretty, you know, they're leading Ligue 1.
At what point do we start proselytizing about Jesus here? I mean, it seemed like the pretty natural entry to spread the good word about the Holy Son.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, since he's finally arrived from Brazil, you know, he was actually signed over the summer, but he didn't come over until January, which in retrospect you start to wonder if maybe they would have had some use for him earlier on in the season. But he's really kind of just revived Manchester City's attack. He's just been so good. He got both goals last weekend against Swansea. He was involved in 3 of 4, I believe, in a 4-0 win over West Ham United. And he's kind of single-handedly walked on water for them and turned that team around. So it's if you'd asked me a month ago how I was looking at Manchester City in this tournament, I would have said they were maybe a long shot to advance, but now I'm not so sure because he's just been that spark plug that they really needed.
Are you drinking water or wine? What's going on over there with all these all these references?
I'm drinking green tea, which is getting me a little too amped up.
If I talk about Monaco for a second, I know City are the odds-on favorite, but I think Monaco is like, if there's a dark horse contender to like sneak through this and somehow wind up
all the way to the final.
I know that's a bold statement, but This is a pretty good team. They've scored over 100 goals this season. I don't think any other team in Europe has done that. I think their coach Leonardo Jardim gets a lot of credit for what he's done. You've got Falcao, you've got other experienced players, Yao Moutinho, Morgan de Sanctis, the keeper. But then you've got these really kind of young academy products, which Monaco has sort of been focusing on since they sold off, you know, the likes of James a few years ago. They've been trying to bring in these players too, and it's starting to coalesce. And I watched maybe a little bit more Ligue 1 than some people, and they play in a really, really kind of, I guess, progressive 4-4-2 attacking style. And you know, there's a reason they're topping PSG in Ligue 1 right now. So I think that, I know a lot of City fans were like, oh God, it's only Monaco, we're going to get through this. But I don't know. I think that Monaco could surprise City.
I'm still in shock that you said you watch a lot of Ligue 1.
I didn't say a lot. I said more than Joe.
I don't watch any, so it's...
Well, what I wanted to say, though, and kind of going back to something that Leander mentioned, is it's not just Gabriel Jesus. You know, Leroy Sané has been really good lately as well. Yeah. And Raheem Sterling's been, I think, pretty consistently good for City. Even when they weren't getting results, he seemed like he was their best player out there, and he was always making dangerous runs and making stuff happen, even if he's not necessarily known as the best finisher. Gabriel Jesus adds a little bit more of an element, but at the same time, when you look at the ages of those guys, I mean, their average is 21 years of age. I think that this competition almost is screaming for Aguero to come back in and do something with it, but I'm not sure that that's the way they'll go. And I think that, you know, and Pep was the first person to point this out. He said, look at all the big clubs in Europe. Who else is starting three, 19, 21, and 22-year-olds? Like, no one's starting that at their front line. And City is an anomaly in that, but I think that Pep has a long-term view of what City can do. And he's, in the group stages, he would say, when people would ask him about City winning the Champions League, he'd be like, Champions League, like, we, you know, this is our second year where we're, like, in this competition for real. Like, are you guys crazy? Like, that's not his end goal. Seems to be much more long-term vision than what people would expect from this season. So I think that if he was to build to that, I think he might go with youth, give them some experience, get these guys getting used to the competition, necessarily looking to necessarily win it this year.
So that was going to be my question. So you're saying he goes with Jesus. What do you guys think? Do you go with the...
I'm not saying he does.
Do you go with the youth and the explosion of Jesus, the savior, or do you go with the experience of Aguero for this? What do you think, Joe?
I think he will stick with the young guys, but I think that the larger question is, as us believing that City's going to figure it out defensively, that they won't have the blunder, they won't switch off on defense, which we've... That back line has done time and again at most, critical moments. And with, you said, Monaco scoring goals, I just see City, can they outscore Monaco? Is it going to be one of these ties where it's going to be back and forth because City's so vulnerable in the back? How's this going to play out?
Before we throw it to Leander, I want to add that I think that's, for me, that's what makes this tie so intriguing, is that City still has so many problems in the back. And, Monaco's been scoring goals. And if you get a chance to get a good attack to put pressure on that defense, you just imagine that they're going to get some goals in. And scoring goals in the Champions League is a recipe for progressing in a hurry.
I think that's generally true in soccer. But fun fact about Monaco... their owner is actually the reason where they've had sort of a swing in fortunes. The guy who owns a team is a Russian oligarch called Dmitry Rybolovlev, and he bought the team in 2011. And then in 2014, he was going through a divorce with his wife, and she was awarded a settlement of $4.8 billion. And that's actually when they started selling off players like Falcao, or at least he went on loan to Manchester United, and they were supposed to make that permanent eventually, although that didn't happen, and James Rodriguez, and a court then sort of lowered the amount of money the ex-wife was going to get, even though they were still bickering over a $28 million ring that he once gave her. But they actually started getting serious about youth development after that divorce settlement was announced, because suddenly their owner was, well, not broke exactly, but he had to kind of mind his money a little bit more. And that's actually worked out really well for Monaco, where they've had this mix of having some expensive pieces, but also having to really develop themselves.
Oil prices going up probably helping the case as well.
Okay.
Next on the financial podcast.
On that note, we'll move on to the last 16 ties that begin on Wednesday, February 22nd. We'll start with FC Porto against Juventus. It starts out at Porto, and Porto's been right now is unbeaten at home during the group stages. They advance with a playoff victory over Roma, and Juve just beat Inter in the Derby d'Italia, but Inter created plenty of chances. You know, Juventus seems like they would be the favorite. I think we were underestimating. It's easy to underestimate the Portuguese clubs because, one, well, the history, but also we just don't know a whole lot about them. We don't see them week to week. Do you think that's a blind spot for us? And is there anything where Porto can do to oust Juve?
I have no idea. I don't watch Porto at all. Yeah. I mean, they're you know, I'm looking at their results. They win matches, but I just, like you said, I don't watch the Portuguese league. I suppose, you know, there's always the possibility of an upset, but I just think Juventus, we're talking about a team that, you know, could reasonably potentially make the final of this competition against, you know, one of the top teams in the Portuguese league. I don't see much of a case for Porto. I could be horribly mistaken. I apologize to any Porto fans who are listening. But I don't know. I see Juve coming out of this all day.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, Juve has the pedigree. I mean, Porto's a good, I think they're a strong Champions League team. And they definitely, you know, they play well, especially at home. But Juve, the quality in that team and the amount of money they spent with an eye to really succeeding in Europe and winning the Champions League. I mean, that, to me, for a club that's been winning Serie A titles on the regular, I think this, their entire focus right now is to get back to the final like they did a couple of years ago and this time actually win it. And so, I mean, Higuain, Dybala's been playing really well as well. I think that they have enough. They have this interesting kind of attacking formation they've been going with where Khedira kind of sits back. And, you know, if you remember a couple of years ago, he went over there on a free. It was kind of one of those where people were like, why are they getting Khedira? He's been working out for them. And, you know, they have the experience. They have the talent. It's hard not to see them progressing in this tie. This is one of the more, you would think, one of the more open and shut cases.
I agree. What Juve has done in Italy is pretty remarkable. Going in a league that used to have six title contenders every single year, you know, between AC Milan, Inter Milan, Fiorentina, Parma, Juve, probably forgetting someone, Napoli, Fiorentina, you know, just kind of cornering that league entirely by having the vision to build their own stadium, which nobody in Italy does. Most of the stadiums are owned by the local city councils, meaning that the clubs miss out on a ton of revenue. Building their own stadium, they've just completely locked up that league. I think they're going to win it probably this year for a fifth or sixth year in a row. They've got young talent. They've got sort of experienced players. They're able to take Gonzalo Higuain from Napoli for 90 million euros. Which is just an unfathomable number. That they're so rich, like Bayern Munich in Germany, that they can buy players just to get them off their competitors' squads. But yeah, they're much stronger than Porto. I see this as pretty open and shut.
Yeah, just a quick shout out to Pjanic as well as a player to watch. He's just got bags of skill. It's fun watching them play.
How far do you see Juve going if? There, it seems to be they're clicking pretty well. Do you think they make a run to the final again? Or
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when we were looking at those odds, they weren't in the top four, and I think they should be. They definitely are a team that has enough talent to do it. I think they're very well managed, and Yeah, I think that they have the experience as well. I mean, you know, when you talk about clubs that have really built teams to win in Europe, Juve, I think you could put at the front of the line, frankly, because they went out and they spent big money on getting Pjanic and getting Higuain. And, you know, they have guys. I mean, they sold really well and they reinvested in their team. They didn't just take the money and sit on it. They immediately turned that Pogba money around and made their team as a whole stronger than they were last year. I don't know if you can call them a dark horse, but I think they're a good, you know, good bet to make the final.
Yeah, they're 7 points clear at the top of Serie A table on their way to their sixth title in a row. What is it? Fifth or sixth? You know, I think that for Juve fans, for the ownership, for the management, the next thing is they want to go one better than when they reached the Champions League final 2 years ago and lost to Barca. So, yeah, I think they have a pretty good shot at the final and probably, you know, are not expecting to reach it, but hoping to.
All right, so this last 16 tie ends at Juventus on March 14th, and we are down to the last matchup, Sevilla against Leicester. And this is another tie that begins on Wednesday, February 22nd. I think we all know what's happened to Leicester. We've talked to ad nauseum about their plummet, and maybe we should devote this analysis to Sevilla. And with some Pauly's been, he has Sevilla in third in La Liga. They're 3 points, I believe, behind Real Madrid, which has 2 games in hand. But that said, I can't see anything other than Sevilla going through. Do you guys agree or disagree?
No, I agree. I'd like to make a case. Sevilla's run out of gas a little bit. They drew on the weekend. They lost their previous match to Espanyol. But I just...
Espanyol's playing really well, and I believe they drew Villarreal, who is a good
pretty
team.
Good team, yeah. So I don't know. Leicester City, you know, we've... I think it's Sevilla. Yeah.
I have hope for Leicester, I think, more than most people do. And maybe it's just because I like the underdog. But I think with Ndidi, they actually have a pretty good player that has been much better than Mendy was for them in kind of the midfield area. I think Slimani's back. And generally, Leicester did perform in Europe, even when they were struggling early in the season. So if that, you know, sparks Mahrez a little bit or smart, I don't think Vardy necessarily is getting sparked. I think he's just kind of been found out a little bit. But Mahrez has the skill level where if he engages because he knows he's playing in Europe, that can make a big difference for this team. And I think, yes, obviously in the back, I think, Robert Huth and Wes Morgan have kind of run out of steam. I think they kind of overplayed them. And frankly, they're not exactly, you know, fast players. So they've kind of been run into the ground. And they on top of that, I mean, really, Robert Huth should have gotten Player of the Year last year, right? We've all been in agreement about this. They just didn't give it to him.
No, you've all been in agreement about that.
Are you still bringing up the column you wrote about Robert Huth? The key to Leicester's title?
No.
As president of the Playa Vista Robert Huth fan club.
Well, I mean, and if I'm saying that I don't think that they can do it in the back, they obviously can't do it in the back. You know, I think Sevilla more than likely passes on through, but I do think that they're Leicester. You know, you look at Leicester, they have some good players that they brought in. Ahmed Musa, I think, is a good player as well. They have players that have actually performed in Europe a little bit as well. They have the makings to be able to compete. I just wonder if it's going to come down to those two center backs just not having anything left to give. And that's ultimately where Sevilla is just going to find them out. But I think that, especially going forward, Leicester has the ability to potentially, you know, charge it up just enough. You know, Andy King actually looked pretty good when we saw him in the FA Cup, and he's a guy that hasn't been part of the first 11 because he wasn't healthy for last season, really. So I think that he kind of gave them a little bit more fighting spirit. So I think that they kind of just need that, because it seems like they play well for 20 minutes and then they fall off. They need something that just keeps that energy rolling.
What do you guys make of these reports that Ranieri's lost the locker room? I mean, if let's say a couple of players aren't, you know, just aren't energized to play a midweek Champions League tie, or just things have changed. Obviously, we've talked about N'Golo Kanté not being able to protect the back four, but you know, the whole Ranieri question, and Leanna wrote about this yesterday, And how does he get them inspired? How does he motivate them to make to continue this run? Because this is really this is part two of the Cinderella story, right? It's this is it. This is how it's going to end. Whether they go on through or they crash out in this last 16.
Well, one of the main voices that's supposedly been fingered out as being, you know, part of the uprising, or if not leading it, has been Kasper Schmeichel. And he's a goalkeeper. If you hit a shot, he has to stop it. I mean, his play isn't going to be affected as much because it's not the energy. It's really you worry about guys like Mahrez. If you've lost him, then there's an issue, because if he's not moving around, he's not really playing for you out in the field, then you can't really do anything. You can't create goals. You can't really go in. But, I mean, if you've lost a couple guys and you can identify them, so be it. I personally am of the mind that he won the league last year. You definitely don't sack him no matter what you're doing in the Premier League until you're out of Europe, because he got you into the Champions League. He gets to play out these two legs at the very least. If he does, if they advance, sorry, you got to keep him on even if you're losing every weekend in the Premier League. He won you the Premier League. That doesn't just happen. Even if you get relegated, I think it's worth it. But that's, you know, that's my opinion, and I have more of a heart than probably Leander.
Correct. I mean, here's the thing. You stick with him through the Champions League, but by the time they're out of that, they might be out of the Premier League as well. And is it really worth, let's say, the added value of keeping Ranieri, hypothetically, is reaching the quarterfinals instead of the round of 16? Is that worth losing your place in the Premier League?
Yes. He won you the league. Leicester City won the league.
But like, now you're
I mean, if there's levels to stabbing, you know, club servants in the back. This guy did more for your club in 1 year than, frankly, no one could have imagined Leicester was going to win the league last year. Everyone can imagine them getting relegated last year, the year before, this year. If they get relegated, it's not out of the ordinary. If they stuck with a guy that won them the league for an extra year and they end up getting relegated for it, but he won them the league, I think it's still worth it.
No English champion has been relegated since 1938.
Well, there's a first time for everything, isn't there, Leander?
But it's just, I mean, if you look at it monetarily, which you probably should because it's professional soccer, I mean, just say best case scenario, Leicester somehow drags itself into the semifinals. I still don't think that's worth being out of the Champions League, because it could take 2 or 3 years to get back. The championship is extremely competitive. You might become a yo-yo team, and sort of all the momentum Leicester will have built up will be under Ranieri, will be kind of lost. I mean, if they dump him and somebody else keeps them in the Premier League, then this can just be a bad season and they can rebuild and become sort of a regular mid-table team. But you don't have the chance to do that if you're relegated, even though you're reached the quarterfinals or the semifinals of the Champions League.
But what if they dump him and they don't stay in the Premier League? What does that say about them?
Well, then at least you tried something, because this is a sinking ship. And, you know, I know that's a dubious argument, but you do see at least a placebo effect from new managers coming in. I mean, look at Hull, look at Swansea. They made some changes. They made two changes in Swansea's case, and it turned around their seasons.
And look at Crystal Palace. They made a change, and it did absolutely nothing for them. I mean, for me, it's very simple, is that I think he's earned the right to manage this team in Europe. If you want to, frankly, bring in another manager to do the Premier League managing for the rest of the season and say, hey, we're going to let you do the rest of this competition, fine. I think that's still more of an honorable thing to do. But I think he's earned the right to manage this club in the Champions League. He got them in there by winning the Premier League. And I think anything short of letting him do that is it looks bad on the club. And frankly, there's just no loyalty left in football at all then. It's really just all to money. And if you want to look at all the money, he made more money for Leicester City last year than anyone would have imagined, just from the marketing opportunities alone. That club really went up a notch. So if you want to balance it out with going down versus the extra revenue they generated last year by winning the league, I still think it ends up being worth it. I mean,
losing a Premier League place will cost you a multiple of what you win by winning the Premier League.
So taking it back to the Champions League, in summary...
Tune in for our Leicester City podcast.
Yeah, enjoy it while it lasts, Fox's fans. Look, guys, we got to go. For Leander, Shahan, Alex, I'm Joe Lago. Until next time, this has been the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Thanks for listening.